Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to In The Pocket. My name's Johnny.
And my name's Chris.
Two totally average bass players, and we're here to talk all about that bass. As well as answering your questions at home, each week we take a look at the latest news, maybe break down some tones, or to give you the lowdown on the low end. I nearly messed up the intro then, but I didn't. Ha ha! Great to be back, because we are back. Chris is back. He's back
again.
Baby. Woo! For those who don't know, if you've been living under a rock, our dear Chris has been on a long, long old tour with his band Darla, and it's good to have you back, man. How are you doing?
Oh, well, thanks for having me back. So glad to see that I wasn't immediately replaced by literally anyone. So yeah, thanks for welcoming me back with open arms.
I mean, you can't see them, but underneath here my arms are crossed, so not quite.
You've got a fresh stack of P45s.
Yeah, 100%.
Is P45 the one we get fired?
You're so out of the corporate world.
I know. I have been fired. I just can't remember what paperwork I was given.
Oh, yeah, my P60. Woo.
Is it? Okay, right. Whatever then.
I'm going to rain them down like I'm doing cash, you know? Like,
nice.
Making it rain, but with P45s.
Oof.
ow.
Yes,
financial burden.
I'm very well, Johnny. It is very good to be back. How are you?
Fantastico. Yes, I'm good, thanks. It's been pretty quiet. I did my first gig of the year. You've done like 20 or whatever.
No,
how many?
16 for the year so far.
16 so far. Okay, that's good. Not is that bad. All? You did some before the tour, right?
Or yeah, I had a few covers gigs. And then the tour was 13 dates. So I think I'm on for about 15 or 16 for the year so far, which is pretty good. Pretty good going for January and a bit
that
of
February. That is very good because, you know, it's not wedding season right now, I suppose. So.
No, it is. It is absolutely not.
So doing good. Doing good. Fantastico. I had a gig and get this, right? The sound guy at this venue that we go into, he's always like such a nice guy. He's great. And he's a bass player, and he complimented my tone. I've done it. I've penetrated not only the bass players, wink, but also the sound guys. So I can die happy now.
Nice. Have you had a compliment from a guitar player yet?
Yeah. Well, actually quite a lot sometimes, you know.
Oh.
Sometimes.
That's because you like drive pedals. So guitarists are probably like, yeah, man. Yeah,
you're not wrong. I had a really, I use quite a lot of tack in my tone, so it's quite naturally driven anyway. But like, I was playing These Days by Foo Fighters, and there's like, it's just like, bam, 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 like going up to the octave. And I was doing that, and I was like, fuck me, this is like really loud all of a sudden, but like, sounds great. And I looked over, and both the guitarists were like, hold on. Just nodding, looking at me. I was like,
that's the one. The best one is I used to get this off my mate Tom quite a lot while I was playing. He would go while he's playing, which is him mouthing the word bosh. Like, so he'd be playing like this. He'll just go
bosh.
Bosh.
Nice. Bish bash. Like, bosh.
Bish, speaking bish, of bash bosh.
Speaking of boshing, you guys should bosh your way on over to Instagram.com/ in the pocket pod. Do people use the URL for Instagram? I don't think so. But
I like
there you
it.
Go. Yeah, that's the we're going old school. Scan this QR code, guys, on the screen now. Head on over to In The Pocket Pod on Instagram, where you can give us a follow and submit questions to this very podcast, just like the lovely people have done so today. We've got a load of really good questions. We were going to, you know, nail them down to a few, but we thought, sod it. We had a week off, so let's just go through all of them. So
we're going in.
We're going hard, baby. Going hard. So shall we crack on with the... Should we do like two or three questions and then do a bit of news?
Why not? Let's do that. So we'll save the more Tory related.
Oh my God, no.
A lot of questions about Rishi Sunak in this week. Nothing I can say on air. The ones related to the tour I've just been on, we'll save those to near the end. But there's a couple of decent ones here. We will go in with Neilster17. We'll go with him first.
Oh.
Pretty simple. He said, hey guys. Hey Neil. Do you take a backup bass to gigs with you? I play in a function band in Scotland and always take a backup with me. Never had to use it, but now worried if I don't take it to a gig, I will need it. Very good point. Nice bit of paranoia there. I can relate to that.
100%.
Johnny, do you take a backup bass with you to gigs?
I am also very paranoid, so yes. Although I never used to. So when I was doing originals bands and I just didn't. They're like, I didn't bother. When I was doing originals bands, even I don't think I had many basses at the time, so I couldn't afford to. Now I always take two basses, but they're not really as backups because we do two different sets. We do an hour of Foo Fighters and an hour of Nirvana, or vice versa. And I use two different basses for those two sets. I use a P bass for Foos, and then I'll switch over to a more jazz style bass or maybe a humbucker type bass for Nirvana. Number one, because it's more similar to the actual sound or the style, and they're in slightly different tunings. We tune down for the Nirvana, so I'm going down to a C sharp, I think it is, and so I like to have a slightly thicker string gauge on the Nirvana tuned basses. So, and the whole thing's half a step down. So, because I'm hitting quite hard, I tend to have like 110 to 50 on that bass, and then and just a hand, because some songs are in drop. So just to handle that, I find it's a bit flubby floppy if I'm going ham on a 105 to 45 string gauge. So that's why I take two basses. However, both can technically be used for the other. So I then have a backup at the same time because I can switch out and use the other one. Not ideal, but I can do. So I've technically always got a backup. Now, there have been cases where we've just been booked for a festival and we're playing one set. I always take a backup anyway, regardless. I think every member of our band even takes a backup. The guitarist, essentially, you know, that they'll snap strings every now and then, and it's more warranted for guitarists, I feel. But it's just that now I can, and I've got the double case. I'm like, it's not actually taking up any more room. My main case is a double case, so why not? So, yeah. It's a yes from me, basically.
Very well. It's normally a yes for me as well. I've noticed it's different, right? So the full tour I've just done, there was no backup bass for the full run. Mainly because I knew if there was a problem, George from As Everything Unfolds was going to let me use his jazz bass. He's got a 5-string jazz bass. And we'd already said before the tour, if there's a problem, can I... pinch this just to get me through the rest of the set. And if his 5-string went down, we'd also said, yeah, I'll just hand you the Dean Wall.
You said, you can... no.
I said, no, mate, no. Grow up. But normally, no. Well, I mean, I only own one 5-string. So there's that. But for weddings, now I'm going to split this into two, because for a lot of cover gigs, I don't take a backup. I just take whatever bass I'm using, and so be it to an extent. Big touch on wood moment here. For weddings, though, I do take a backup two reasons. One, for weddings, I tend to bring a bass with rounds and a bass with flats. And depending on the set, I will, because I'm usually playing multiple sets, I will swap them in and out. So sometimes I am booked to play in the afternoon. In the afternoon sets, it's always like pretty chill stuff. Like it's more more towny things, or an acoustic guitarist is playing with me, so I will play flats because I just feel like that seems to work a little bit better. And then all the sort of more lively songs are in the evening, so I bring the rounds. And then also, if one of those broke for whatever reason, I could do the set with the other one, because it's not really going to be the end of the world if, like you, like, I've done a wedding full of rock songs with my P bass with flat wired strings on it, and it's been more than fine. It's felt different to play, but it's not been an issue. But yeah, like I said, normally I wouldn't. But the other reason as well that I bring too is the simple fact someone has spent a lot of money for a band to be on stage.
Yeah.
Like a lot of money. You know, there could be five people up there getting anywhere between £200 and £400. And then there's an agency fee, a sound engineer, all these fuel expenses. You know, a lot of cash has exchanged hands to make this performance good. So in my eyes, it's like, you should probably take a backup just in case something happened. Because the worst thing for me would be to, like, oh, the gig kind of, like, is going to be considerably worse now because, like, something's broken on my end.
I totally agree with that. And I feel like with a pub gig or something, you could be forgiven not taking a spare, or if, like, things go, or if something, God forbid, goes wrong with the bass, can't use it, oh God, I can't play. Like, for a pub gig, I mean, you kind of get away with it a bit more than a wedding. You don't want to ruin someone's experience.
Let's be honest,
if the bass is gone, the whole day will be ruined, you know?
The whole wedding. They'll
divorce there and then. It will be annulled.
That's it, straight away. Yeah. Someone will die, obviously, yeah.
Wow, that escalated real quick.
It did.
Like, it's, you don't want that ownership to then be on you, that you're like, oh God, it's like, it's ruined their special day. Whereas down the pub, that's no one's special day, apart from, like, I don't know, Darren, who's on at the bar or something, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I have a gig on Saturday, so the day this episode comes out, and I'm only going to take one bass with me. But that's also, like, a logistical thing. Like, I'm actually getting public transport to and from the gig because of where it is.
Yeah.
And it's a nice bar that do free cocktails for the band, so I will be exploiting that. absolutely.
Not the Dingwall,
just be one bass, but not the Dingwall. I don't know what I'm going to take for that. I might reach... The Godan needs fresh strings, so I might put fresh strings on the Godan.
Treat myself.
Wow, wow, wow. Beautiful.
Love Perfect. It.
Show me about the next question.
We'll do another one. There are a couple here that we can definitely, like, whip through quite quick. Whoopsh. But this one is Andy Clark Kent.
Interesting. Oh my God, the Clark Kent.
The Clark Kent.
Might as well just call yourself Andy Superman.
One's from Superman, who's asked a question I don't feel like Superman would ever ask. Should all musicians, including bassists, because we are musicians too, should all musicians, including bassists, have basic knowledge on how to operate a PA system? Yes. Absolutely.
Honestly, 100%. Yes. Like, it saves your bacon so many times if you know what you're doing with a PA system. Like, I'm no sound engineer. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, to a full extent, but having a basic knowledge of what goes in where and where that goes out and what that does is not only going to benefit you and understanding on what your sound is doing, where it's going, where it needs to go, but also countless times I've been in practice rooms and the person running it hasn't been there or something, and it's like, got to set up this PA. I just had to deal with it, you know, and I'm always the guy to be like, well, okay, let's plug this in, do this, blah, 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 turn this fader. And being able to troubleshoot, basically, with that. That's where, to me, it comes in handy.
That's the thing. It's the troubleshooting element for me. Like, you can... I'm not a sound engineer. I could mix a band live if I needed to, but I'm certainly not an expert. But for me, again, having the ability to kind of, like, okay, I understand the signal path of where my bass is going, and then I can see a channel strip and I know what I'm looking at. Like, the amount of gigs I've done with people, of all instrumental professions, drummers, singers, everything, you just look at a desk and go, oh, I don't know. Why does it sound crap? And it's like, well, because the gain knob's on full, so all the signal's peaking, or someone's put the low cut button on, and, you know, all these kind of things. And then understanding the very basics of, like, is this PA active? Okay, well, then it's got plugs that need to be plugged in. Is it passive? No, it goes into a power amp. Where is the power amp? It's there. Yeah. Is it turned on? No. All these, you know, these basic things of how do you send signal to a monitor? Like, well, there'll be a monitor out or an aux that the monitor is connected to. Yes. You turn these up to get that. They're all, it's all helpful information, and it can't 100%. Hurt. It's not complicated. There'll be YouTube videos out there where you can get the basics of how a PA is constructed. And you can even do them in 30 minutes.
Yeah, and like, yeah, because like even these like very simple little Behringer ones, you know, that's the fundamentals are there. With for yourself as well, be doing lots of weddings, like you said earlier about you might be doing like a little afternoon set at the wedding that's just you and a singer, or like you and an acoustic guitar or something. That's probably going to be your own PA system that you're using, or the singer's PA or the guitarist PA. And if they don't know, I've turned up to gigs before as a photographer. And did I say gigs? I meant weddings. I've gone to weddings before as like second photographer, and had to help with the PA system because the person doing like the music to when they're walking in is like, oh, it's not working. I don't know what's going on. And I've had to be like, right, okay, let's have a look and like help them out.
It can't hurt. I think the main answer is it can't hurt. You can learn a basic amount within like 30 minutes of scrolling through YouTube. Just do it. You never know when it might come in handy.
100%. Yes. Shall we look at some news now?
Why not? Let's do that.
Why on earth not? Well, it's not been a crazy busy week for news, I feel. There are a few things worth talking about, though. Chris, have you ever lost a bass?
Never. No, I have never lost a bass. Why do you ask?
Because there was a very famous person who has lost a bass or had it stolen, and that bass has now been returned. Would you like to see the story?
Oh, sure. Why not?
Could you do that again with 10% more joy?
Sure. Why not?
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Paul, everyone. Who looks a little bit like my Uncle Gareth in that photo. That's really weird.
I didn't recognise him for a minute, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, that's like later years. So Paul McCartney, obviously famous for being a bass player in the Beatles, of course, has been reunited with guitar stolen 51 years ago. I know it's technically a guitar, but come on, BBC. Call it a bass. You know what you're doing. So the article reads... Sir Paul McCartney has been reunited with the bass guitar, there we go, he used in the Beatles hits such as Love Me Do and She Loves You, 51 years after it was stolen from the back of a van in London. So this thing's been missing for 51 years. It got stolen in 1972.
Mental.
That's crazy. And he's saying that he's incredibly grateful for its return. So apparently,
I wonder if the strings are the same.
Well, it's probably all flats, right? So
this prick's changed the strings.
Yeah. Well, no, they did. They did change the
strings.
It's got Diodaros on it, so they're still alive. I mean, not Diodaros. I meant elixirs. Damn it. Can't
yeah,
do
exactly.
That.
It's got a 51-year-old elixir strings still going strong.
Still going. Wow. So within the article, you can see it's a famous Hofner there. It's a very nice looking Hofner though. I actually really like it.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with the strings in this picture.
Well, I'll tell you for free that they're broken.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And so apparently it had been restrung because it was strung right-handed. So someone had taken it and used it because, of course, Paul McCartney is famously a left-handed player, and that's why the dubbed Beatle bass, the violin bass Hofners are so good, because they're just, you could just swap them around and you're fine. Not much else to say about this. Apparently, there was a whole campaign that went into finding this, and they eventually tracked it down. It was a hand-me-down, so I think it was like a 21-year-old guy inherited it, and it was just sat in an attic in Hastings.
Wow.
We don't know the full story about how it got to there or where it went from there. But yeah, it was just in there. Apparently it says they found it and it was sold to a landlord of a pub in the area before it made its way to Sussex, where it was sitting in the family's attic. Like, I've seen loads of Hofners for sale before, and normally they're like the really cheap, like not great ones or whatever. But like, imagine just having this sat in your attic, not knowing.
the potential value of that base. Like,
it's mad, isn't it? Does it say, was there like a reward, or like, was it just given back to Paul?
I'm pretty sure it was just given back. Nice. They say at the end of the article here that the guitar was originally purchased for £30 in Germany in 1961.
It's just bullshit, man. Like they do us dirty on the housing market, and now you can. And then now we learn that you can buy a Hofner for 30 quid.
Jeez, come on.
Cozy lives.
Yeah. End it now. Just want to stop.
Just want to end it now.
Yeah, I think so. Wow. They say here that John Lennon's stolen guitar sold for $2.4 million. Dollars. When it resurfaced half a century later, I can't imagine this will quite have the same value as that. But it would fetch a pretty penny. So
certainly.
It's impressive that the person that stole it wasn't like, I'm holding on to this until one day it's worth it. Unless he was waiting for Sir Paul to pop his clocks, you know.
Maybe he just got bored and was like, this man hasn't died.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Better give it back, I suppose.
Yeah, oh well, better give it back.
Well, Sir popped his clogs, that's his name. Mm. If he dies soon, that's a really, really bad way of doing it. Sorry. Okay, let's move on to the next bit of news. And it's a release, an artist release of a model, so kind of in similar vein, I suppose. And it is Peter Hook has released a new signature bass with Eastwood. Now, I am not too familiar with Eastwood. I know that they're pretty reasonable for what they are. Like, this is £1,200. And I don't think that's too bad for, like, a signature bass. I don't quite remember where this is made. But,
well, that's the kicker, isn't it? It's like, made in the UK, amazing value for money. Made in the US, amazing value for money. Made in Indonesia, absolute rip-off.
Yeah, exactly. But
yeah.
I'd still love to try one of these. Like, for those that aren't watching on the video version, which, by the way, you definitely should if you're listening, you chumps, it's called the Eastwood Hookie Viking Pro, and it's a gorgeous-looking semi-hollow, comes in dark cherry and black, very traditional, like a 335-type body, but with a precision pickup in the bridge position. So
reversed, I might add.
Oh, yes, sorry, it is. So you're going to get some, like, big high-end tones. I say high-end as in, like, top-end, not, like, expensive.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Because of that and being in the bridge position as well. I think it's very cool. It does look strange when you first see it. It's kind of like it's going, meh, meh, you know? But I'll take that.
Meh.
That's fine.
Yeah, but you would look at that and go, oh, that's a bit weird. But that's perfect for Peter Hook.
Yeah.
Because Peter Hook bass lines are actually all high melodic things like Joy Division and stuff like that. Proud fellow Northern bass player Peter Hook.
Yeah,
but
let's get him on the pod.
We should get him on the pod. I actually know people who know him, so I reckon I can sort that out. You know,
they're going to Peter Hook you up.
Absolutely, nice one. Very good.
Thank you.
Yes, cool.
So,
bass. Very cool.
Yeah, it's actually a reissue of, like, an original one that they did. I hadn't really seen much about this bass before. I know he's got his signature Yamaha, which has the reverse P pickup, the BB, but this is just a lot cooler, I think. I see quite a lot of those Yamahas for sale, weirdly. And it's not wild pricing for what it is, I think. Yeah, love to try it. Looks pretty cool. I do have a question. It has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 knobs, a switch, and a single pickup.
So
I do not know what's going on under the hood. Let's have a look, shall we? Oh, I can't read it from here. I'm quite far away.
It is active. Acid.
Yes.
Do you want me to read it? I can read it from here.
Did you say acid?
Yes.
It's air, full of acid.
It is. Yeah, active and passive switch. In passive, it's a volume and tone only. Active boosts the output and adds a free band EQ circuit. Yeah, so
okay.
The controls are volume, tone, and a free band EQ, bass, mid, and treble.
Great.
Yeah.
I bet this sounds awesome. Like, with this kind of bridge position pickup, I think you kind of do want a bit more tonal control, because otherwise it's going to be
bit of a one-trick pony, which isn't a bad passive, thing necessarily. But
yeah, passive, you can see that being like a mean, lean honk machine.
Yeah, and exactly.
You might want to, like, if it's active, maybe like duck the mids a little bit and boost like quite a lot of low end to make that sound like a normal P bass.
So you duck would have the mids.
Yes, you would have to
duck
boost
the mids to make it less honky.
Don't ask me how this works.
No, I just liked the duck references, that's all.
Yeah, you're welcome. But to make that sound like an actual P bass, you would have to boost quite a lot of low end, I reckon, to compensate for just, you know, it's hundreds of miles away from its original position.
100%, yeah. Well, there we go. The Eastwood Pete Honk 335 Viking Pro signature bass. I like it. It's very cool.
Quack.
Speaking of some things that are very cool, and some things that are a bit uncool, really. Not uncle, like uncool, sorry. Fender have unveiled their Custom Shop 2024 basses.
Wow.
Yeah, say it with me now. Wow.
Wow.
Like, I don't know. Custom Shop, yeah, I've played a few and they are phenomenal. They're great. I'm not saying they're bad, but they just don't interest me. Like, I mean, is this just not like the most like, oh, just vintage reissue thing you've ever seen? With a couple of exceptions. Like, this jazz bass is pretty funky, and this bass 6, because yes, there is a bass 6 included within this.
Of course there is.
Matt Parker will be very, very happy indeed.
No, I'm sure he will.
I'm actually, I hate to say this, Chris, I'm going to side with him here, because I think the coolest out of all of these is one of the bass 6s, and I'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, these are like this says here, $4,850. And it says here that this first in the lineup is a limited edition P-Jazz bass relic. I mean,
what's a P-Jazz?
What's a P-Jazz? I was thinking, is that what they're calling a PJ or something? But it's just it's a jazz bass with more P-bass tendencies, like a thick neck. It's got like a U-shaped neck. And that's kind of it. And I'm like, right. Ah, really? Okay. Like, wow-wee. Cool. And again, I want to reiterate, these are going to be fantastic. They're master built by people that are flipping artists in their game. But just doesn't do anything for
that
me.
That one's cool.
Or the black one.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool. It's one of these again where it's like, you know, it was the great philosopher Tom DeLonge who once said, I've been here before a few times. we've seen this before. Like, it's just kind of like, yeah, cool. Don't get me wrong, though. Like, that P-Bass we're looking at right now is cool. I'm not paying $4,000 for it, though. Like, I mean, no. I'm not paying $4,000 for anything.
Like,
but
you could get that in a Squire form and do that, those mods to it. I know. It's, yeah. I'm obviously not comparing the two. It's not the same. But, like,
well, I am.
that's exactly the same. If I was going to get one of these, I think, obviously, I love the 50s style honey P-Bass. Like, that's a dream. But I think if I'm going Custom Shop, I'd probably end up getting a real proper vintage style 50s, early 50s, like 51 P-Bass. Like, I feel like that's where you're going to get the most uniqueness, perhaps. Let's look at that jazz bass that they had. I don't even really think this is very nice, to be honest.
Is that the only picture of it?
It is on here.
Because it just looks dirty. That's the only way I can describe it. It just looks like it needs a clean.
Yeah, that's like proper vomit burst, isn't it? Like, it's not even a burst, but like, yeah, that looks like the bottom of someone's, like, the nightclub toilets at 3 a.m. Yeah. Or like, take the pickguard off or make it black or something. I don't know, not doing it for me, that. But what is doing it for me now, yeah, that's a cool color, matching headstock, very nice bass 6. This next one, though, holy guacamole, that is the best looking bass 6 I might have ever seen. That I love this. I can't see your face right now. Is it saying,
probably
is
best.
It agreeing? Is it saying, wow? Wow, Johnny, wow.
Johnny, looks like a guitar.
What? Yeah? What's
I've
your,
seen
what's
that
your
guitar.
Problem, bro?
Because we play bass. We've been over this.
But it's so good.
Don't get me wrong. It looks lovely. Although, if you know what? I've got to be honest. I think I would rather have it in that pink.
Do you have eyes?
Believe it or not, yeah. Not made of eyes. It looks fine. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. It's a lovely colour. Like, I even preferred that one. I have seen, like, Squire Bay 6s that I actually go, oh, that looks quite nice. That black and gold one that dear alumni Matt has modded and made, that's lovely. That looks so nice. This looks like a guitar. It's fine. It's fine.
This is killer. This is killer. It? Yeah. It's going to kill you in a minute.
Is it really?
Yeah, man. Big time.
Cool.
Comment down below if you've realised that Chris is wrong. That is me furiously making other accounts to comment.
Exactly. Who's Donnie Gibble?
Donnie Gibble, 69.
69, 69, 420.
But yes, that concludes our wonderful news section there. Let's crack on with a few more questions, please.
This is a question from Juskter14. I'm really sorry. I would click on your profile and get your actual name. However, this is a screenshot of the Instagram comments, not actual Instagram, to conserve battery. So, nice and simple one, I think. Do you prefer amps and cabs over combos? If so, why? Would you like to go first?
I'd love to. Amps and cabs all day, baby. All day. I've never been in a line of work where a combo is really, like, the thing to use, like, only at home practicing or, like, my first combo amp, you know, like, that's all the combos I've ever had, really. Because then I just upgraded to head and cab and just never look back. Like, it's easier to transport, and sometimes I don't need to take the cab. I know your setup, and I'm sure you'll get onto this in a minute, like, sometimes it negates the whole need for a cab. But, like, I'd much rather have a cab, and then I can change the amp out as well, just be more flexible with it. Or I go to festivals where there's a cab provided, you know?
Yeah.
And then if I had a combo, what am I going to, like, oh, no, can I put my combo on stage, please? No, it doesn't help with loading in, loading out when you've got to be fast, fast, fast. Like, it's just not a viable and practical option for the type of gigs that I'm doing. So, and it never has been, honestly. I am head and cab all the way.
I will keep it very short and to the point, unlike me. Head and cab for literally the exact same reasons you listed. So let's just power straight on, really, I would say. Because there are two I want to get through before we move on to things that are a bit more in the same subject.
Okay.
So, Scoggin bassist. Which series / range of basses do you think has the coolest name?
Ooh.
I don't know, you know.
So I don't know about the coolest. I think we might just have to go through some that are cool. So I'll start off with, like, I mean, the Thunderbird is... That is, I mean, maximum
cool
sex
name.
Appeal.
It's a cool
sex
name.
Sex appeal to the max.
Yeah, okay.
So that would be my first suggestion. The Ibanez SR705392AXPYPI. You know,
FR.
FR, sorry. Friendless one. No. The Ibanez.
MS. MS.
it's got MS. Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
The Ibanez Iceman. Amazing. I could throw some BC Rich names in there. In fact, what are the current?
We got the Mockingbird. We've got the BC Rich Bitch.
That's the one.
What else do BC Rich do? Mockingbird. What's the one / used?
Oh, we've got the Warlock, of course.
The Warlock. That's what I meant. The Warlock, and then the Mockingbird is what / played.
Yeah, the Iron Bird.
The Iron Bird.
And the Widow. Oh, my God.
What's the Widow?
I'll share my screen now because you have to see it. It's excellent. although the page isn't loading. Oh my god, this should be the backup base that you should get for Dalek stuff, man.
Go on, I'm ready. Hey. My body is ready.
Oh yes, yes. Look at that. It's only £1,300.
It's a PP as well.
It's a PP, double P, and look at that headstock. Isn't that yum yum?
It's so cool. Like, this is, I'm not even being ironic here. I really wanted a BC Rich guitar when I was a teenager.
But yeah, because you were a teenager.
And it's all Mick Thompson from Slipknot's fault.
Yeah.
Yes.
No.
My contribution to this is I'm just going to go for the P bass, because I like how it was called the precision bass, because it has frets. It was like, it's precise.
This is the sound good bass.
So I'm going to park that, and I'm going to move on to one more question.
Okay.
Because it's the only one that isn't related to being on tour. So, this is from Billy Woodfield Bass. Technically, you have asked two questions here, mate, so we'll grant you this. How do you guys balance playing with your own original bands and session/function work? That was question one. Question two, does one come before the other? Interesting, because, Johnny, you just play covers. Am I got that right?
Yes. Yes. I've not written a song in my life. No, that's
ever.
A lie.
Ever.
No, I haven't been in an originals band for maybe 5 years now.
Probably the best.
Yeah. So, probably for the best. So, I'm always teasing the idea of doing it again, or like, just, I mean, I've got like albums bloody worth of stuff written, but like, I don't know, it's never a priority. And I think that's where what it comes down to. I mean, my answer for this is simple, that like, I've only got the one tribute band that I do. So that's it.
There we go.
Chris to serve.
Chris to serve. How do you guys balance playing with it? I mean, it's balanced pretty well, really, for me, because, like, Darla's not really that busy in terms of gigs. Like, the tour that we've just done is in the middle of, like, the quietest bit of the year for covers gigs anyway. I mean, I had to turn down two gigs that came in after this was confirmed. So I did lose gigs for it. But in terms of balancing it, I would say it's just down to priorities, really, is kind of the main thing. So whether one comes before the other, you'd have to decide. Like, I don't really know which one takes top priority, because for me, they're both just plates that I spin.
Yeah.
You know, it's not necessarily that one is more important than the other. You know, if a big Dala opportunity came in and I already had a gig booked, I would probably look to depth the gig out so I could play the Dala opportunity. But I know for a fact, we've already had these conversations with Dala the other way around, where originally, so this tour that we just did wasn't supposed to be at this time of year. It was actually supposed to be late last year. And I had dates in the diary anyway. And what we were going to do was essentially, I was still going to do the weddings that I was booked in for, and bass was actually going to be on track for those nights.
Oh.
It was like 3 dates out of like 16, but it was like, guys, come on, that's like nearly, you know, £600-800 of revenue for me. It's like, I can't, you know.
Yeah.
But we had that with JR, guitarist on tour, that like, he didn't play the Cardiff date of the tour because he had a work commitment that was in his diary months before this tour was confirmed. We sorted out a workaround and we just did it. Like, you know, we're not unrealistic people. It's like, Pete, you've got to earn money. Like, you don't earn any money being the support band on a tour. You know, the goal is break even, and that the ultimate goal is break even. There's no profit. So if there's something that comes up that like pays for your life, it would be a difficult conversation if the rest of your band were like, no, we don't want you to do this, we've got this talk. It's like, well, like, I'm an adult, like, you know, like, I'm not 16 on holiday, like, I've got bills to pay. So
you do have an expensive lifestyle, you know.
I have an incredibly expensive lifestyle, he says, with his 2011 Nissan Micra, and buys about one base every 3 years. Exactly. But yeah, for me, though, one doesn't really come before the other. At the moment, we've been pretty lucky in terms of balancing the two. And if something came up, it would just be a case of, like, communication is important, really. You'd have to talk to your band. If this was you and you had covers gigs coming up.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But when your original's band at work,
yeah,
you would just need to have that conversation with your band, and hopefully everyone is reasonable.
Yeah. And if you've come up with this like situation, I suppose the only thing to keep in mind, or what I would be keeping in mind, and you know, I would obviously try my best not to have things clash, but I have had things, you know, gigs come up where I can't do them, and then they've had to get someone else in, and that's the point. It's more likely that someone can dep the covers gig than your originals, you know, and depending on what position you are in that band,
exactly,
can determine that. So, yeah, it's never a thing you want to do, but it's possible for things to get covered in that. For that machine to keep working. But yeah,
exactly.
Originals is a much more grueling game because you're fighting for someone's attention and everything. So it's almost like every opportunity is you need, you know, rather than covers where, like, you're being paid to be there and it's like you're paid to do a thing.
Yeah, and you are a bit more disposable as well. And I suppose, for a lot of people, it's like their originals project is like their baby. Like, it's like a really passionate thing of theirs. So any opportunity for that to grow, they want to grow it. Whereas with cover stuff, it's very much like I enjoy this, but it's there to pay the bills. I mean, I really, really like playing covers gigs, like a lot. So for me, it's like, it's not just like a money thing, but, you know, you've got to just, you know, sometimes things clash and you just have to try and work it out.
That they do. Speaking of things clashing, I don't really know how we're going to clash, but should we move on to the next section?
Yeah, what is the next section? Because I don't know.
We're going to listen to a tone.
Oh, that's nice.
So
who's brought that?
I have. Surprise.
Surprise.
I'm going to play it down the mic. Is that okay?
bum,
bum, bum. That was pretty good. So, as you know, Chris has been on tour, and so we thought it'd be very lovely for you to share the tone that you've been playing on tour. You've posted a couple of clips on Instagram, but here we've got a sound recording of Trials, isn't it? From
it
Gala.
Is. Well noted.
We're going to have a listen, and yeah, just break it down a little bit more, what's going on in the quad cortex there, and what you're using, etc., etc. So let's give it a spin. Damn, son. So that was recorded live at the gig, right?
That is live. That's 100% live. Drums and bass, completely live, straight off the... you know what? Not even straight off a mixer. That is... So this is quite cool, really. So I've got that Zoom H4n Pro, And what you're hearing technically is you're hearing a base DI. It's not a DI. It's output 2 from the quad cortex, which is an absolute duplicate of what the front of house get, which is output 1. And the only thing I'm doing... What were you laughing at?
The way you just said it's an absolute duplicate. Like, it's a fucking duplicate,
It's fucking bang on,
it's
mate.
Been it's been duplicated.
Because it's the same menu and everything. But, yes, it is bang on the same. And the only extra things I'm doing in post with that are I'm actually rolling everything off under 90 hertz. Live, it's 60 hertz, but considering it's like social media and I wanted to leave room for the kick drum, it's 90 hertz. And then I've done a little boost at 1.5K just so you can kind of like hear the bass and the bass part a little bit more. Live, it is a little bit more scooped. Just to sort of suit the needs of the actual band. Because if I had that big boost at 1.5, I feel like I'd be in the way of the vocal and the guitar a little bit. So that's the bass. And then the drums, what you're hearing there is you're actually hearing a Yamaha EAD, which is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
They're great.
If you're a drummer, mate, buy one. Like, so what we did was, we actually had 2 drummers for the tour, but both drummers had the same setup. So what you're hearing is Ed, who did the last four shows with us. And then the first half of the tour is a guy called Tom. Tom plays in a band called The Throwaway Scene, which if you're into kind of like early My Chemical Romance, kind of like post-hardcore vibes, Johnny, you'd love it. I'll send you a link to it in a minute. His band are great. Like, Tom's a great drummer. Both guys were lovely. Really great band. But to get back to the tech thing... what the Yamaha EAD does is essentially it's like a microphone, but then it's also triggers. So what we would do is Ed would set up his EAD and then he would record it as well while he's playing, and then he would send a signal of the EAD to our in-ear rig. So the front of house, the PA and the audience don't hear the EAD. They get the drum mics, the actual mics. But in my in-ears, I get the EAD, which is essentially a kick sample, a snare sample, and a small microphone picking up the cymbals. And it's fantastic. Genuinely, it was absolutely fantastic. My in-ear mix for the tour, which I think I will do a video on, was genuinely bass guitar, the EAD, so drums, and a click. I had no live guitar, no backing tracks, no vocals.
Wow.
It was hardcore. But
I suppose you're getting some of that naturally. Leading through
you can
anyway.
Hear a little bit in the microphone. Like, if you listen closely to that recording again, you will hear a bit of screaming and a little bit of guitar, but it's very, very slight. So essentially,
that was the boys and girls in the crowd
going, "Yay! I love Dingwalls." what everyone just heard then is essentially the EAD with a bit of compression. That's it, really. And the bass with a little bit of compression, a little bit of EQ, and then they're just blended together. And that is basically it, really. It's a really impressive piece of kit. And what you heard then was me banging my head, running around while recording that at the same time. And that was the end result.
Incredible. Well, great playing as well, considering, having seen you playing live and going ham, sounded toit like a toiger. So
thank you very much.
Props to you, sir. Very, 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 very most excellent. Sounded bloody lovely. Is that, I'm assuming that is your standard kind of Ampeg SVT with the crossover?
Yes. So that is the SVT preset, which is on the Cortex Cloud if you've got a quad cortex.
There we go.
And what that is it's really... Realistically, it's like a Dark Glass X7 pedal into an SVT. That is basically what it is. But inside the quad cortex, there's a bit of compression. There's a crossover splitter, which has distortion on anything above 250 hertz and nothing, no extra stuff, below 250. That goes straight into the front of like an SVT and an 810, pretty scooped, bit of bass, bit of treble. And then there is another compressor, which is just set a little bit lighter, and some very basic EQ. And by very basic, I mean there's a roll. So I do this with every preset. Whenever I'm recording stuff, I always do the same thing. There's a roll off at 65 hertz for the unnecessary subs that we just don't need. With this, with it being more like contemporary heavy music, there's a pretty aggressive dip at 500 hertz, and there's a dip at 3K, and a roll off at 6K. That is it. Nice and simple. Well, just kind of like getting the unnecessary pick attack out of the way. You know, the really horrible kind of harsh bit. We're getting rid of that. Yeah. Adding, and there's a lot of gain on that. So by adding a lot of distortion, we are introducing a lot of upper harmonics, which I don't want. That's why I'm rolling off at 6K. And then that's it, really. And also, those strings are pretty old.
I was going to say, that's quite... That's the Newcastle, wasn't it?
So that's that's Newcastle, which is the second to last date of the tour.
Yeah, so that's properly sweated in.
Yeah, that's two 6-hour rehearsals and 12 gigs.
Yeah, pretty good.
Not bad. Oh. Didn't change strings. And I was playing them at home today. And yeah, don't get me wrong, they're not like as good. They've lost the zing. You know, they're proper like... zing,
bit of spice that you
at the top. They've lost that, but they've kind of mellowed out, and they're still, I could gig them, I could record with them, and it's perfectly fine. Yeah, not bad Dingwall strings, not bad at all.
Yeah,
not too bad
all around. Sounded great, man.
Stainless steel as well.
My light has just died again, so you're gonna have to just deal with that now. Just a not very lit but very lit boy.
Would you like me to stand in solidarity with you and do the rest of the episode like this?
Just turn them all off.
Yeah, just like, there we go. Welcome to In the Pocket. My name is
fantastic.
Chris.
That's perfect.
Is that better? I actually can't find the on switch.
As long as you're on my eyes.
Yeah. Camera one.
Wonderful.
Camera two.
Well,
camera one. Camera two. Anyway, sorry. Please continue.
Riveting. Thank you so much for bringing it along. Sounded great. And hearing it in person as well at the Bristol gig sounded matey. So
I will say you and Matt gave me some of the best mix reviews or critiques ever. Like, I came to find you after the gig, and you were like, mate, it was bass drum and bass guitar, and it was mint.
We were like two second row from the front. And as soon as it kicked in, we were like, whoa. I felt like the kick was in our chest.
I will say most nights that was the mix. It was like, like my bass guitar was so loud most nights, which I guess must be good, because if you sounded like crap, like we've talked about before, if you sound like crap to a sound engineer, they're not going to fix you. They're going to turn you down.
Oh my God. I wonder why you got quiet during the set.
Exactly. Right.
Well, should we talk about that a bit deeper now as we head into the final section of the podcast?
Oh, go on then. Why not?
So, obviously, you just come back from tour. First big tour. It's amazing. And, you know, people want to know how it went, what went down, what challenges you faced, etc. So, I wonder if you can just start things off, Chris, by saying how you found it in a nutshell, to start, you know?
Challenging, absolutely. There was definitely some hard stuff. You know, it was interesting because... I came into the tour, like, I'm, you know, gigging is not new to me. Like, I do a lot of gigs. So there was a lot of stuff that the skill set I already had carried me into the tour, and it was fine. You know, things that you would expect from any type of gig that you used to do. And then, though, there was a few bits that I've never experienced before as either a originals band that hasn't really got a leg up anywhere, or covers. And some of those things really threw me off. And some of them weren't. Mm. But yeah, overall, very good. Very hard in the places I didn't expect. And not that hard in the things I did expect, I believe. Is the right way of phrasing it.
What, I don't want to focus too much on the bad. We'll talk about like challenges and stuff. But like, what do you think was easier than you thought it was going to be?
Never tired at any point after every set. Not even at all. Not even close. Like, giving it beans for 30 minutes felt like nothing, genuinely. because I'm so used to playing for an hour, 90 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours in one night. You know, sometimes playing, you know, 3 60-minute sets with a 20-minute break in between. You know, these kind of things. That getting on stage and playing for specifically 28 minutes just felt walk in the park. Like, genuinely could have just gone again. Not a problem. So definitely kind of like the stamina of playing for a lot definitely carried me through. You know, at no point did I experience like arm fatigue, you know, neck pain, anything. Just from I've built up an endurance from playing so many covers gigs. So yeah, what else though? What else was easy?
It's because you've been headbanging so much to Mr. Brightside at your covers gigs.
Absolutely.
No bangovers at all, you know?
No, there was no bangovers, which was I actually thought wouldn't be the case because I was throwing shapes.
Yeah, impressive.
Absolutely. What else? Speed of packing up and tearing down. That wasn't a problem either because, you know, I'm just used to doing that. You know, you've got to get in, get out quick. Whether it's covers gigs or any musical thing, really, you've got to rip through. You know, I'm used to packing all my gear down very quickly at 2 o'clock in the morning because I want to get in my car and drive home. So that was fine. Sort of general levels of like professionalism around like the environment you're in. You know, I'm used to dealing with people a lot for my line of work, whether it's clients or an audience, or it's musicians you've never met before. You know, you're around people constantly. Like I genuinely, with the exception of being on the toilet or in a shower, or someone was within 2 meters of me the entire tour. Like, you know, at no point did I have my own room. You know, we were sleeping at friends' houses or hotel rooms that had 3 single beds in them, or Airbnbs or spare rooms of people's houses, you know, these kind of things. There was always someone. So luckily I'm used to that from gigging so much with so many different people and having to be sociable at all times, that again, these were things that just bounced off me. Not to say they were easy, but these were all experiences that I have experienced before and struggled with in the past. But you know, you were coming into this touring environment and going, yeah, we've done this before. This is just the same as waiting in the green room at a wedding venue.
Yeah, you just kind of crack on with it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it felt very familiar.
Well, good. The thing I always found about touring was like, it was just the waiting around that was the worst thing, where you're just like waiting for the doors to open. Like, everything's done. Or like, if everything's gone to plan, you know, and you're just, you know, I guess you could explore where you are, but not really. Like, you can't really go and see the sights check stuff out.
I saw nothing of nowhere, genuinely. Like, I'd been all these cities, you know, I had friends who'd recommended things to me and were like, oh, you know, blah, 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 I was around the corner from the venue, like a restaurant or a coffee shop. No, just no time to see anything, genuinely, no. Because we were the first band on as well. Like, by the time we'd sound checked, doors were 30 minutes later. We were on 30 minutes after that, sometimes 15. It's just like kind of... And then, you know, I was doing crew work for the headline band as well. So, you know, as soon as I stopped doing that, I was doing this instead. So, you know, there's no... I walked to get a coffee in Glasgow, and that was it. Genuinely, that was the only time I left a venue the entire
time. Wow. Impressive. Wow. You're not allowed outside in most cities, though, are you? So
exactly. I'm not, no.
No. We have got some questions from the audience as well, specifically about your tour. I know you said a bit about packing down, things like that. That reminded me of a conversation we had. Leading into this question, what is the best lesson you learned whilst on tour?
There's a couple of things. Related to gear, I would say... streamline your rig to just brutal levels of efficiency. Like, you know, I knew where everything lived in my already stripped down flight case that my entire rig was in, to the point of efficiency, but also it meant I could look down while I was packing down and going, there's a gap there, and I knew that gap meant I've not grabbed my Hercules guitar stand.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to go, you've got that, you've got that, you've got that, what have you not got? It was looking down and going, this isn't as fully patched as it was yesterday. In the bottom left corner, there's a gap. That gap is where my stand lived. And then you would look behind you and go, there's the stand.
It's a built-in idiot check. I love it.
Yeah, it was built. It was built-in idiot checks to the point where it was like, I knew when I shut the lid on my flight case, it shut properly with the smallest bit of resistance, because there was a few cables that when they're piled up, just high enough to push into the foam, just. And I knew when I shut that, I was like, that is the same level of resistance I got yesterday when I checked everything. Okay, we are good. So it's like built-in levels of idiot checks, because you just have no time and you're moving so quickly from loading in to loading out. So I would say that.
Because you need to pack down quick, not only to get let the next band get on, but get your shit out of the way.
Yeah.
And so it's not just like side stage in the way. And so that then you can go man the merch, or you can go out and watch the other band. You know, like, you have to do these duties whilst you're out on the road. So
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot. I would say have everything rock solid to the point where if there is a problem, you're able to diagnose it very quickly. And I mean like a second. You know, like for example, you know, we had a problem in the Oxford day where my bass was just incredibly quiet. And because I knew my gear so well, I was able to look down and go, right, the ding wall is in passive mode, so the active EQs are in play. That's fine. The battery's not a problem. Tick. Wireless cable's plugged in correctly. Tick. Is the battery okay on the wireless connector? Okay. Tick. Straight into the quad cortex input and output menu, because I know where that is. Signal's healthy. Signal's healthy. Then I turned and looked at Jay, who had our laptop open with our in-ears, and I was like, what is it? And he went, you're like 30 dB quieter than what it was. Conclusion, cable. So it's like, all those things were literally like, bang, 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 bang. Yeah. Jay, what's the problem? Okay, it's that, cable. Because you just don't have time to fix an issue. And even then, we swapped a cable out. I did a 5-second like, bam, 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 bam. The level was healthy. Muted it, doors open. You know, like it's like, you know, people, and then 300 people come running in. And people were running in because they wanted to get on the barrier. So it's like, if I was faffing for 5 minutes, about you've just lost your sound check completely. So things like that got to be really quick. And then the last two things I'd say is, this sounds really silly, but spur chargers for everything. Not necessarily because you'll lose things, cause I didn't lose anything. But it was more like you need to charge your battery for your GoPro. Your GoPro is in your flight case underneath a load of other equipment in the back of another room. But you've got the batteries with you because you've been traveling with them in your backpack. Lucky me, I have a GoPro charger, which is a USB-C cable and a plug, with me. Now I can charge everything. So it's all kind of like, you really do just have to lock in your process.
Even
I overdid it to the point where I was like, this is getting a bit silly. And even then on tour, I was like, oh, this is actually an acceptable amount. So what might seem comedic in real life in the sort of touring cycle is considered normal.
I feel you completely and totally agree that it's just like, if something could go wrong, it will go wrong one day. Something will happen. I've had wirelesses drop out before, and you got your cable there ready to go, you know, all your backups, you got to think about that kind of thing.
And the only thing that went wrong, genuinely the only thing, was I forgot to offload the SD card for my Zoom recorder, which meant halfway through one of the sets, the SD recorder ran out of space and just stopped recording. That was the only problem, and that is such a
ruins
first
the
world,
set.
It doesn't matter. You're like, so be it. It never affected the show. And then the last thing I mentioned is, like, sleep is so important. Like, I didn't drink on tour. I probably had, like, 3 drinks the entire tour. That's the number 3, not the currency. because of I knew we were getting into environments where we were coming back to our accommodation at 3 a.m. and we needed to be out the door to do the next drive at 9, 10 a.m. I can't really sleep in cars or sat up. It's just not something I'm particularly good at. So I knew I had to be able to like go to sleep at that point. So it's like I'd prepared. I bought myself a nice air mattress because I knew I was going to be sleeping on it nearly every day. A nice sleep mask, decent earplugs in case anyone snored because I didn't know if anyone snored. Yeah. A few people did snore and I'm not good with snorers. So luckily the earplugs had my back. You know, I'd covered everything. I'd basically, you know, restricting caffeine intake until, let's say, you know, I wasn't having any caffeine after like 2 p.m. even though I'd had a show because I needed to be tired to go to sleep. Again, these aren't very like exciting things, but it's like going to another show. Exactly, going to another show on the bounce, not well rested, and then say getting drunk the second night. Means by the time you get to the third night, you're losing things. You don't know where stuff is. You forgot to charge stuff. You play a bad gig. You know, all these kind of things. It was like kind of keeping everything just locked in place so nothing could fall apart.
Yeah. I think that's great advice for anyone out there going to do it, doing long runs of shows, to have things maintained and so it's sustainable, you know, and that you can keep everything in good shape the whole time.
Absolutely.
Very serious question.
Oh, here we go. The most important question.
Yes. How many shits did you take in service station bathrooms?
Well, technically it was all of them. I just hit my microphone while I said that. Technically every...
Wait. What? But, yeah, but I'm just anticipating what you're going to say. Every shit you did in service station or every service station you did a shit?
Technically both. no, because hopefully we're doing this. A lot of the venues had questionable bathrooms. Certainly a few of them did. And yeah, just I needed the bathroom when we were traveling, not when we were at the venue. So that's just when I went to the bathroom.
See, I feel like my standard for a bathroom is pretty low. Like, I'll drop trowel wherever I need to.
Oh, No, I don't think you understand. Like, there was one venue in particular that was bad. Like,
the type you think I might come away with a disease.
I genuinely said to the promoter, I'm not using that bathroom. Like, seriously.
Not after what I've just done in there. Oi, oi.
No, it was bad. Like, I don't think it had ever been cleaned. Ever. So yeah, lots of poos in service station toilets and stuff like that. Yeah, it's got to be done. But that's another thing as well. It's like if you ate loads of bad food and you drank and then you travel in, maybe you want to go and you can't. So trying to eat healthily as much as you can and drinking a lot. Like I drank a lot of water, like a lot of water. That's the real heavy hitter, like being dehydrated.
Yeah, I'm dehydrated right now. My water's run out and I'm having a bad time.
Devastated for you.
I can't imagine on tour, you know. Let's bring it back around now. Thank you for that, by the way. That was incredibly insightful.
You're welcome.
That's the kind of thing why people are even listening to this.
Exactly. So, no guesses. You. No guesses who asked that question.
No. It was Ian Martin Allison.
It was Ian Allison. It was you, Ian.
Next question says, what do you think is the best lesson that you learned from tour?
Probably everything I just mentioned in the other bit.
Oh, wait. Have I already asked that question?
Yeah. You have. Wow.
Sorry. I cut that out. I delivered that so confidently.
No, leave it in. No, leave it. You should leave it in. Bathe in your error.
I was like, this doesn't sound like what I asked before.
I was going to say it. I've given you from four absolute nuggets here. Like, this is the best I can do. I've got nothing else.
Nuggets, just like you did in those service station toilets, am I right?
They were logs, my friend.
Oh, good. Good for you. Good for you, man. That's healthy. Okay, I've got the actual question now.
Thank you.
How many pisses did you... No, it's... what's the post-tour come down been like for you?
Great. There wasn't one. at all. Like, at all. I was tired the first day I got back, obviously. But to be honest, no, there wasn't. Because I think, like, the touring wasn't, like, a euphoric, non-stop party kind of like, ah, this is amazing, every day is the best day of my life. It wasn't like that. It was hard work. Like, you know, it was difficult. It was great, but it was hard work. So by the time we got to the last show, I was like, oh, tired now. I'm ready to ready to come back home and relax. So when I got home, it was like, okay. Yeah. There was no, it was so strange because I genuinely did expect to be like, oh, God, like, I'm not getting tired till 3 a.m. Like, you know, I've got to do laundry. You know, I've got to cook some food instead of buying it from, like, oh, I tell you what, though. Like, I had to have Mackey's 4 days in a row because there was just no, genuinely no other options. Like, we went looking for other options, but there's only so many places you can get food from at 1 o'clock in the morning on a motorway.
Yeah.
And the only, like, 4 days in a row, and I was like, I hate this. Like, you know.
Matt and I tried to get McDonald's on the way home from Bristol.
Oh, really?
From seeing the gig, and we couldn't.
Yeah.
We couldn't.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we ate after that gig. There was nothing on the drive back. From Bristol to Oxford, there was, like, no services. It was really strange.
Wow.
So we just went, oh, well. Starve to death then. But, yeah.
The come down then. The come down.
Yeah,
that
there wasn't one.
So,
genuinely, there wasn't one. I really did think there was going to be one. But it was just like, I'm back. I've got shit to do. And it was just, I was just doing the next thing. You know?
Do you think that's because we're a bit older? Like, it's not that same thing anymore? Or, like, do you think that's a reflection of the tour or home life? Because home life is so good, you know.
I think it was a reflection on the workload of the tour, because what we weren't doing was showing up, sound checking, playing gig, drinking a rider full of beer, having a laugh, being driven somewhere else, going to sleep, repeated.
Yeah.
It was work, and it's like, you know, like, there was a lot of driving that we were doing. You know, we didn't have a driver or anything like that. And then we were getting to the venue, we were setting stuff up. We had duties for the headline band that we'd agreed to do for them. You know, it felt like work. It felt like good work, but it
like
felt
a well-oiled machine at work.
I never stopped. Like, I genuinely never stopped. And then even bits where I had downtime, I was editing reels for social media, or I was looking for footage, or I had other stuff I needed to do, like messages I needed to get back to, or, you know, I was doing stuff. There was not really any, like, you know, I'd prepared to, like, watch stuff while I was waiting around for things, and just didn't look at a single thing. Like, didn't go on YouTube once, you know, like, all these kind of things. It was like, you know, just nonstop, pretty much. And then got home and I was like,
to watch
well,
my content.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, I don't watch it anyway, so.
Yeah, so then you got home, then you're like, huh.
And like, I'm
home
back
now.
And then it's okay. Like, well, now I've got enough, you know, I've got things to do. It's like, I've got, you know, I've got admin to do. I've got a gig on the weekend. It was like, we're just into the next thing now. Like, I have some social plans. It was like, okay, that was that done. Not in an unhealthy way. It was like, you know, not stressed, but just like, okay, that bit is done.
Yeah.
Next thing.
Nice. Well, and I feel like this is coming across a little bit like, oh, it was very good. It's like, oh, well, it was fine being home. I'm sure you don't mean it like that. More
no,
like...
No, that's what I mean. It wasn't bad in any way. It was great. Like, I had a really good time. But like I said, I expected to come home and go massive come down from all this stuff. And it was like, it just wasn't the case. Like, you know, I was tired from all the work. And I was ready.
The drugs.
And all the drugs. And I was ready to be out of that environment and into, like, the next environment. Like, I got home from the tour the morning after, went straight to the gym. And I was like, this feels great. Which is probably another thing. Like, you know, there's a couple of other people in the touring party who treated, like, the next day as, like, a lazy day. And they've been saying, like, oh, I'm knackered. Like, I've not recovered. Whereas I guess I got back and went, right, we're going straight into the gym. A high to an extent from going to the gym, and then that's kind of like settled me out, and then off I go. So
I think it just means
it's difficult to explain without sounding like ungrateful or like I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I am grateful, but it was like I just got back and was like, right, I'm There's a to-do list of other things I need to do that are all things I'm equally excited to do. Like, I'm excited to, you know, I've got, you know, Origin have sent me a pedal, which I'm very excited to do some content for. And I was like, that arrived while I was on tour in the post. So I was like, I'm excited to get home and work on that. You know, I had, you know, we hadn't done a podcast in a while. So I was like, I'm excited to come back and do a podcast. Hadn't seen like family or like my girlfriends. Like, I'm excited to see them. I was excited to go to the gym because I hadn't been to the gym for 4 weeks. I was excited to do that. I think maybe that's what it was. There were things that I was looking forward to doing when I got back that ticked the dopamine, serotonin boxes that the tour gave me. So I didn't have an immediate moment of like excitement, boredom. It was like excitement doing one thing, back now, excited to do another thing. I like balance. Yeah. Coincidentally was quite well balanced on my end.
I suppose it's a way to look of it as like that was a good thing. It's not a bad reflection on the tour. It's a good reflection on home and things that you enjoy doing that you could do again, you know, that you couldn't do whilst on tour.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like I missed being at home as well.
Well, when we were there, Matt Parker and I came to Bristol to see you guys, and we had a great time. So, you know, you guys played awesome. And it sounded big in the room.
Well,
so,
thank you very much.
Yeah, we had a great time traveling out to Bristol together to watch you slaying on stage. So props to you, man. Good one. And I'm glad it went, you know, overall was a great success.
It was great success. King of the castle.
King of the castle. I have a chair.
He cannot afford.
My God, should we start a Borat, like,
no
tribute band?
No.
Yeah.
Ali G, maybe. Borat, no.
Bruno. Each member is a different character.
Oh, amazing.
I'm going to be Bruno, just like doing it flea style. Just lift up your bass and just your knobs, I'll be an Ali G. Spinning around.
I'm going to play drums and be Ali G.
Yeah, fair enough. Nice.
Me Julie. That's sick.
Me Julie. Me drum kit.
Me Julie.
I love this. Amazing. Well, Chris, thank you for telling us some tales from tour. It's great to see you guys smashing it out there. And I look forward to hearing and seeing even more in the future, hopefully. So, yeah, nice one. If you guys want to check out some of the content or see some of the shows that Chris has been playing, you could do so. I'm keying you up here to promote yourself, Chris. Where can people find you on the internet?
I don't know. See ya.
Fair enough. Bye.
You know what, that's a really good point, because I can't remember the Instagram handle for my band, so that's good. The band's called Darla. My band is called Darla. There is a link to the band in my Instagram bio. My Instagram is that guy on bass, so you could find it there. But while I'm here, in the interest of dead air, let me pop that up. Oh, that's a picture from Johnny Dibble. That's exciting, isn't it?
Hey, that's me.
We are called, Darla UK. That is the name. That is our Instagram handle. Yes, check it out. We posted some cool photos while we were on the road and a few videos. Only other confirmed date we've got in the diary at the moment is we're playing Burn It Down in August. It's down in Torquay. Have I got that right? It is in Torquay.
It is.
I'm very, very, very excited for that. And yes, please do check us out. There's a full EP on there for your listening pleasure. I think the EP's just cracked 75,000 streams as well, which is quite cool.
Ooh,
for a,
nice.
For a itty bitty band that haven't really put like loads of money into promotion and stuff. So it's a great success.
So now the idea of the Borat band is you're
exactly
seeing it through.
Everything Fantastic. Is just great success.
Amazing. Very nice. That's the name of the band. Great success.
Well, the band's called Malwife.
Jesus.
Exactly.
Thank you, Chris, for that as well. You can find me over on Instagram at Johnny Dibble, and the same over on YouTube, on TikTok as well, but it's at Johnny Dibble Bass, because there's another Johnny Dibble, and fuck that guy, I say. You know?
Fuck that guy on bass. That's what I always say.
Yeah. If you want to get involved with this very podcast, make sure you go and follow us on Instagram, where we take most of our questions from, and you can just interact and see all the content we're putting out. We've started a new series of Slap or Crap. You can go and watch all of those, where we're just reacting to different bases and saying whether we like them or not, basically. It's good, jolly good old-fashioned fun. That's what I'm saying. Subscribe on YouTube, and if you're listening on your platform of choice, make sure you rate us 5 stars. It helps something to do with algorithms. One other thing you guys should do is follow us on TikTok. Oh my god, yeah. we're like proper young, you know. We got a talk tick, so go and
we're totally not nearly 30. Absolutely. I have all the TikToks.
So go and talk tick yourself over there, and give us a follow on that if that's your platform of choice.
Go talk yourself.
Yes. Oh my god. So yeah, all good stuff, and we're moving places, and yeah, big things coming soon, let's just say that. Once again, everyone, thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time.
Ta-ta for now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.